This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. Each day brings us one day closer to the 2014 midterm elections. Republicans are hoping they'll be able to take control of the U.S. Senate this year. Democrats are hoping to retain control of that body, and they'll likely have their eyes on unseating Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. There are also a number of gubernatorial races on the ballot, including the one in Ohio. Joining us to discuss the early outlook for the 2014 elections is Kyle Kondik, who's the communications director for the University of Virginia Center for Politics. He also contributes to Saboteau's Crystal Ball, a political analysis website and newsletter created by Center for Politics director Larry Saboteau. We are taping this segment, so we're not able to include your phone calls and emails. Kyle, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Before we start, Saboteau's Crystal Ball, a very well-respected website, and you have a pretty good track record, I understand, of predicting the outcomes of elections.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're always gonna miss one here or there, but our record over the years has been pretty good, and you know, we usually get 95% or more of the races in the various categories, and so we will pick winners in all the Senate, House, and gubernatorial races. Certainly by November, and you know, some of the races are kind of toss-ups right now, but for the most part, we've got a kind of an idea as to which way they might go.
Now, since you're affiliated with the University of Virginia, how do you use this as a teaching tool for students?
So a lot of our subscribers are teachers, and they use the Crystal Ball content to just sort of talk to their students about the political process. And my boss, Larry Saboteau, has always kind of thought that one way to get people interested in politics is to sort of, you know, pick the winners and losers and try to, and kind of deal with the horse race, because a lot of people, I think, are really interested in the horse race. I mean, I think that a lot of people sometimes complain about how politics is covered because it's so focused intently on, you know, who's up and who's down. And I agree with that to a certain extent, but also people are really interested in that. And it's kind of the more fun aspect of politics, and so we get it, you know, we sort of get at that, and we've got a newsletter that comes out every Thursday morning. If you go to centerforpolitics.org/crystalball, if you just give us your email address, which we won't share with anyone, you can sign up for it, and it's totally free.
And so let's begin to take a look at that crystal ball, and let's start with the races that I think most everyone seems to think will be easy, and that's in the U.S. House of Representatives, where I think even most Democrats are resigned to the fact that the Republicans are probably going to retain control of the U.S. House in November.
Yeah, I think that's right. Essentially, you know, what we know just sort of generically about midterm elections is that if you're the president's party during a midterm, you typically do poorly, and there's a great kind of overall stat about this. Since the Civil War, there have been 38 midterm elections, i.e., you know, when there's the president's not on the ballot, like 2014. In 35 of those 38, the president's party has lost ground in the House. There are a few recent exceptions to this rule. Bill Clinton and the Democrats picked up a few House seats in 1998. Of course, the economy was doing great then. And also, impeachment was going on, and I think a lot of people thought that that was an overreach by the Republicans. And then in 2002, the Republicans and George W. Bush added a handful of House seats, and of course that was an election colored by, you know, terrorism and by Iraq. But generally speaking, the president's party does poorly in midterms, sometimes very poorly, like George Bush and the Republicans did in 2006, or more recently, President Obama and the Democrats in 2010. And if you look at the House map, it's probably going to be fairly stable. The Republicans may add a handful of seats, but I think it's going to be hard for them to get even to double digits because there just aren't a lot of good targets for either side. I think what we've seen over time is that the House is sort of leveled out to the point where there just aren't a lot of Democrats from Republican-leaning districts, not a lot of Republicans from Democratic-leaning districts. And so, you know, I think stability will be what we'll see in the House, but I think the Republicans are probably have a better shot to add seats than the Republicans do, or than the Democrats do, I'm sorry.
You wrote a piece about the Senate races, which are the ones that really people are going to be watching in 2014, and suggested that, you know, in fact, things break their way, they could win control of the Senate.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing about the Senate is that it's all very cyclical, and so if you have a good year, you know, one year, that those same seats are up 6 years later, and so you look at this group of Senate seats that are up for election this year, they were last contested in 2008. Well, of course, 2008 was a really good Democratic year, and now 2014 comes around, and some of those incumbents aren't going to, won't have the kind of environment that was helpful to them 6 years ago. And so if you look at the competitive seats, there are basically the 11 most likely in our eyes to change parties are all held by Democrats, which is kind of crazy to think about. And that includes seven Democratic-held Senate seats that are in states won by Mitt Romney in the 2012 presidential election. Obviously, those are the best targets because it's just hard to be a Democrat from a state that voted for Mitt Romney. Meanwhile, the Democrats have only a couple of targets, and to me, they're not great targets, but they're possibilities. One is Georgia, which is an open seat, and another, of course, is the race that a lot of people are watching, and that's in Kentucky with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell running for another term.
And in the Republican National Committee has started an ad buy in 14 states where they're targeting voters who are unhappy with President Obama, may have voted for him twice, but they're now, you know, not backing him. Is that going to be a significant factor?
I just mentioned the trend that the midterm election is, not always, but generally a kind of a backlash against the incumbent president's party. And so, you know, there are naturally going to be people who are dissatisfied with the president who are going to maybe vote a different way, particularly because President Obama's approval rating is, you know, depending on the average you look at, is somewhere around 42 or 43% of the vote. So obviously there's a small segment of people who voted for him in 2012 who don't approve of his performance now, you know, because he got 51% of the vote in 2012. Those are the voters that I think the Republicans are going to be targeting. The thing is, too, is that the midterm dynamic is such that turnout's usually lower, and usually the party not in the White House is sort of fired up to vote. And that's sort of compounded by what we're seeing in the electorate now, which is basically that the more reliable voters who vote in not just presidential races but midterms are more Republican-leaning voters. Older voters who lean more Republican generally vote more often in midterms, whereas minority voters who are pretty overwhelmingly Democratic don't show up in midterms the way they do in presidential elections. So you put that all together, and just sort of structurally, it's a real good environment for Republicans.
I found it interesting that recently President Obama sort of issued a warning to Democrats in Congress saying, hey, this could be a rough ride this year.
And, you know, they said the same thing in 2010. I remember when I was living in Columbus at the time and went to the Obama was at Ohio State, and it was right before the election, and he was warning people, you know, that they needed to get out or it was going to be a bad midterm. And, of course, by that time it was already clear to a lot of analysts that the House was going to flip to the Republicans. Actually getting the Democratic voters to the polls this year is just going to be really difficult, just like it was in 2010.
What's the you've said one of the races that Democrats probably have an eye on for the U.S. Senate is the seat in Kentucky held by Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. What's your crystal ball outlook as we speak right now for that contest?
So we're actually pretty bullish on McConnell. We have it rated as likely Republican. A lot of people see it as more vulnerable than that. They call it leans Republican or a toss-up. Obviously, the polls are very close. both Mitch McConnell and Allison Lundgren Grimes, his Democratic challenger. They're kind of tied in the low 40s, depending on the average you look at. McConnell's approval ratings are very, very poor. Depending on the poll, he's in the low 30s, which is really pretty awful for an incumbent senator. But on the other hand, you know, it's Kentucky, and even though Kentucky is perfectly comfortable voting for Democrats for state offices, you know, they have a Democratic governor, most of their statewide elected officials are Democrats, and the state house is controlled by Democrats. At the federal level, Kentucky's a Republican state, very Republican state. And what the challenge for Allison Lundgren Grimes, the Secretary of State there, in trying to beat McConnell is that, you know, President Obama's approval rating is probably in the low 30s or lower in Kentucky. And so she's going to have to get, you know, 15, 20 percentage points worth of voters who disapprove of Obama to send her to the U.S. Senate. And I just think that's a really, really heavy lift, even though the voters there seem to be, like, fairly sick of McConnell. And so I just think that, but particularly after the primary season is over, McConnell has a Tea Party challenger named Matt Bevin, although McConnell seems to be leading pretty comfortably in that race. I kind of expect that Republican voters will start to come home after the primary. But, you know, if the polls are like this, you know, I don't know, 5 months from now or something, you know, it's going to be one heck of a race. I think it will be close, but it's just really hard to see McConnell losing in an environment like this. I mean, if he was going to lose, it probably would have been 6 years ago when he actually did have a pretty tough challenge, but ended up winning by about 5-6 points.
Yeah, and if those polls remain close over the next 4 or 5 months, it's going to come down to money then, isn't it?
To a certain extent. I mean, and of course, McConnell is going to have essentially unlimited money to spend, given that he has a really big war chest, and also there are all these outside Republican groups. But Grimes has raised a lot of money, too, and there are lots of Democratic groups as well. I mean, there's some thought that this could be like a $100 million race, which is kind of ridiculous to think about, given that Kentucky's not that big of a state and it doesn't have particularly expensive media markets. But, you know, McConnell's a very serious man, and he sees his sort of moment of triumph right over the horizon, because if he wins, there's a decent chance that he'll be the Senate Majority Leader, which has probably been the, you know, goal of his life. And for him to lose in an environment where that's possible, you know, that he's been taking this race very seriously. Sometimes you see longtime incumbents sort of get surprised because they're not running hard. You know, if McConnell loses, it won't be because he was surprised.
You said right now in the polls, McConnell has a comfortable lead over Matt Bevin. If that were to tighten up, and actually when the votes are counted in the primary in May, is that going to be something that will maybe change your crystal ball rating as you go, you know, through the summer months into the fall? If the McConnell Bevin race is not a blowout,
you know, potentially. I think that you know, again, I mean, I freely admit that we are sort of out on a limb on being pretty bullish on McConnell. A lot of other analysts don't feel that way, and certainly if you look at the polls, they're justified to think that. But yeah, I mean, I think we're going to be watching the primary, and also, you know, what if we're in? I mean, I think the primary is in May. You know, what if we're in? May 20th is the primary. What if we're in July and August and the polls are the same and it's really close and they're tied at, you know, 46 or something? You know, then we might have to reevaluate things. But I think we'll see that after the primary, McConnell, I think he should be able to sort of consolidate Republican support and then at least go up a few points in the polls, which, you know, will indicate to us that he's probably going to be okay. You know, we'll just see. But again, it's just kind of harder to see how Grimes gets to 50% or gets plurality, given the kind of environment that we're probably going to be in, and given Kentucky's leanings at the federal level.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about the 2014 midterm elections with Kyle Condick, who's the communications director for the University of Virginia Center for Politics and also contributes to Sabatow's Crystal Ball, a political analysis website and newsletter created by the Center for Politics director Larry Sabatow. We are taping this portion of the program, so we're not able to include your phone calls and emails. With the McConnell race, I believe the state's junior senator, Rand Paul, has endorsed Mitch McConnell. But how fine a line does he have to walk, since there is a Tea Party challenger in the primary, if he himself wants to be a presidential candidate in 2016?
You know, I don't think that McConnell and Paul have the greatest relationship. It's kind of funny that there was McConnell's campaign manager was also worked for Rand Paul, and there was this big dust-up last year about this campaign manager was, like, caught on tape sort of complaining about having to work for McConnell and other things. And so there's still a bit of frostiness between the two, particularly because Mitch McConnell supported Trey Grayson, who was kind of the establishment candidate who Rand Paul beat in the 2010 Republican Senate primary in Kentucky. I think that they're sort of, getting along at this point because McConnell knows that he needs Paul in Kentucky, and I think that Paul is smart enough to know that he doesn't want to alienate the guy who could be the Senate Majority Leader. In that, I think that Paul is a little more savvy than his father, Ron Paul, who was the presidential candidate in 08 and 12 and 2012. Ron Paul was sort of more aggressively anti-establishment, I mean, to the point where he was almost, it was almost like he was a, you know, libertarian candidate, not really even a Republican. Rand Paul is sort of more of a more of a classic Republican, even though his opinions on things, particularly on foreign policy, are a lot different than, say, Mitch McConnell's. And so I think that both of them are sort of looking at this race as, you know, they kind of need each other, even though they may not really like each other all that much.
Now, looking at the polling, national polling out there for 2016, is it time now to look at Rand Paul as a serious candidate for president in 2016?
I think he is a serious candidate for president, and the fact that he and his allies, or at least his allies, I'm sure with his, you know, backing, are trying to change Kentucky election law to allow him to run for re-election to the Senate and for president at the same time,
yes,
certainly is a pretty big tell that I think he's really very much considering running. In fact, I'd be pretty surprised if he didn't run. I don't see how Paul gets to the nomination, and here's why. One thing that we found that political scientists have found to be predictive in presidential races is that the endorsements from party leaders actually matter. Like, you know, who certain senators or members of the House support can be kind of predictive. Usually the person who gets the most endorsements from the, quote, establishment, you know, elected members of Congress or party leaders, those are the people who generally win nominations. And you know, if you look at 2008 and 2012, after the Republicans sort of flirted with more conservative options, they ended up supporting kind of the mainstream establishment figure in the race. And in 2008, that was John McCain. In 2012, it was Mitt Romney. And so if Rand Paul is sort of the outsider candidate, which I think he would be, I think his history indicates that he would probably have a hard time getting the nomination. That said, I do think he's certainly more viable than his father, and I think he would, you know, he's, we rank the presidential contenders at our crystal ball site, and we have him right in the top tier, not at the top, but he's certainly a contender, and I think he would make even bigger waves than his dad if he ran.
There are also a number of gubernatorial races this year on the ballot. How many states have races? And at this point, again, here in March, your crystal ball, how many of them are competitive?
So there are 36 gubernatorial races this year all over the country. Most states hold their governor's races in off years to sort of detach them from the presidential race. Although, again, we talked about the fact that, you know, midterm electorates are a lot smaller than general than presidential election electorates, and so a lot of people who would weigh in on a governor's race in a presidential year stay away in a midterm year, and so The outlook, the Republicans currently control 29 of the 50 governorships. Of course, Ohio is one of those. I would expect the Democrats probably will pick up at least a seat or two. There are a number of pretty vulnerable Republican incumbents, particularly in Pennsylvania, Maine, and Florida. I think John Kasich is still a pretty decent favorite for re-election, although it's certainly possible that Ed Fitzgerald could score an upset. I think he would need some help from Kasich in terms of Kasich making the kind of verbal gaffes he was making in 2011, because I think that Kasich can sometimes come across as a person who's not that easy to like, and I think that the Fitzgerald folks need to try to milk that for whatever it's worth. But I also think Kasich has been basically on pretty good behavior for the past couple of years, and the last time Ohio voted out a Republican incumbent governor was 1958, which was one of the worst years for Republicans basically in the party's entire history, and so nationally and in Ohio. So I think it would take something that we can't really foresee right now to help Fitzgerald beat Kasich, but it's certainly possible.
Well, Kyle, you know Ohio, and you know that jobs and the economy are kind of the driving force behind statewide elections, particularly governor. And Kasich got some good news this week with the job numbers. I mean, if that trend continues, does that...
Although here's the thing, Howard, is that I think that if the economy is bad, there may be an instinct basically to blame Obama as opposed to Kasich, because I think people just like pay more attention to the presidency. I mean, I wish they didn't. it's a really oversimplistic way of looking at politics, but that sort of dynamic I think benefits Kasich, in which, if the economy is bad, Kasich may not necessarily get the blame. I'm sure the Democrats will try to pin it on him, but it was a lot easier for Ted Strickland to take the blame for a bad economy in 2010. Because he shared a party with the president. I mean, if there was a Republican in the White House in 2010, I don't think Strickland would have lost. It seems like a gross oversimplification to say that, but I think that's probably true.
What about this in Ohio? The Republican legislature and Governor Kasich has signed some changes to election laws, taking away the Golden Week, where folks could actually register and cast an early ballot in the same week, and made some changes to early voting hours. Is that going to be something that perhaps the Democrats can use to drive their base to turn out for Ed Fitzgerald?
Yeah, I think that anger is a pretty good motivator in politics, and particularly if you go back to 2012, Pennsylvania passed a pretty draconian voter ID law. It actually never ended up being used in 2012, but I really think that law, because it was seen rightly or wrongly as being a way to sort of disenfranchise or target minority voters, I think that sort of helped drive minority turnout in like greater Philadelphia like through the roof. I mean, black turnout was very good all over the country in 2012, and certainly in places like Philadelphia and also Cleveland, it was very good. I do think Democrats obviously are very, very focused on this issue, and they do use it as a turnout tool. As for the practical effect of it, Brent Larkin at the Plain Dealer had a good call about this recently, talking about how even with, slightly reduced availability of early voting, Ohio's early voting is still a lot more kind of liberal than other states, including a lot of states that are a lot more Democratic than Ohio is. And so is it really going to affect Democratic candidates the way the Democrats suggest? No, but I understand why they're talking about it, because it's a tool to fire up their base.
Is there anything there was a special congressional election in Florida that I know I heard reported on the national media. Anything that we should take away from the results of that congressional election, where I believe a Republican won that seat?
Yeah, so that was a kind of a mild upset. It was a very close race, and A lot of people, including myself, thought that the Democrat Alex Sink would win that race. I think the reason it got so much attention is because the district is very close. Obama got won it 50-49 in 2012. Obviously, won 51-47 nationally, so that's a district that was very close to the national average, albeit leaning a little bit Republican. The Republican candidate ended up winning by 2 points there, again, in kind of a little bit of an upset. But the thing is that I don't think that special election really told us anything we didn't already know. You know, Republicans are probably poised to do well in the House and the Senate, maybe retake the Senate. But we didn't need, you know, there was 183,000 voters who voted in that election. You know, there are 130 million who voted for president. I think that's it's 0.001 of the percent of the presidential electorate. I mean, this is not a big universe of people we're talking about who voted the other day in Florida. You know, if 1,500 of them changed their mind, it would have been a different result. And so, like, I don't know if you know, it was a close congressional race in a close district. I don't think it's necessarily predictive of anything. And, you know, furthermore, special elections aren't really bellwethers. I mean, remember, you know, back in Ohio in 2005, Rob Portman's seat was up, and that was a very close race so that Gene Schmidt, the Republican, ended up winning. Did that really predict anything? Well, I mean, it was a close race, but she still won, but then the Democrats won the House the following year. So, like, you know, you could use it as evidence of anything you want. So there are countless other examples of special elections either being predictive or not being predictive, and so I wouldn't pay a ton of attention to it.
We've been taking an early look at the 2014 midterm elections. Our guest was Kyle Kondik, who's the communications director for the University of Virginia Center for Politics. He also contributes to Sabatow's Crystal Ball, a political analysis website and newsletter created by Center for Politics director Larry Sabatow. You'll find links to additional information on our website, wvxu.org. Coming up after the break, you'll hear about a new book on character inspired by Cincinnati Reds legend Joe Nuxall. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.